document is, I guess, being submitted on the briefs, so skip that. Next case that's being argued is Martinez versus Astru. Mr. Schultz.
If it please the Court, Your Honors, Ms. Siegel. Barry Schultz representing the plaintiff, Anita Martinez, this morning. Ms. Martinez's SSI disability plan, the ALJ found her to have the severe impairments of depression and arthritis. The ALJ then found at steps 2 and 3 that she had moderate limitations in concentration, persistence, or pace. The plaintiff had testified to significant problems with concentration, staying focused, completing tasks due to her depression, her suicidal thoughts, as well as the severe pain that she experienced from her arthritic condition. But in her residual functional capacity assessment, the ALJ found only a limitation to unskilled work, along with a limitation to light exertional work, but no limitations that would reflect problems with concentration, persistence, or pace. Similarly, in the hypothetical question asked of the vocational expert, the ALJ only included a limitation to unskilled work and no specific limits that would be related to concentration, persistence, or pace.
That would be related to what? I didn't hear you.
Concentration, persistence, or pace. About 2 weeks ago, in the case of O'Connor Spinner versus Astru, which plaintiff cited as supplemental authority, this court ruled on this very issue, and I believe that case should be dispositive. This court underwent a detailed analysis of all the case law involved with this issue, stating, quote, the ability to stick with a given task over a sustained period is not the same as the ability to learn how to do tasks of a given complexity. Therefore, the ability to do unskilled work, as the ALJ found in Ms. Martinez's claim, does not necessarily establish that she can sustain tasks over time. And problems with concentration, persistence, and pace deal more with the ability to sustain tasks over time. And given the plaintiff's testimony of the serious problem she had in concentration, the ALJ should have included some limitations. This court has talked about limitations to low-stress jobs or to jobs that don't require a high production or a fast production rate. But none of those findings were made in this case, and we believe that the ALJ's decision should be reversed on that basis. In addition, the ALJ failed to analyze whether plaintiff had any limitations in the use of her hands. The plaintiff had what the one rheumatologist, who's the only specialist who did examine Ms. Martinez, found that she had a subtle but true inflammatory process, and he diagnosed her with inflammatory polyarthritis. Now, the plaintiff had pain in various parts of her body, and it would migrate from time to time, which is consistent with an inflammatory polyarthritis. But she frequently...
Did the ALJ ever mention that diagnosis?
The ALJ does mention that Dr. Hurston noted that she had very subtle evidence of an inflammatory process. But then there's no analysis about that. And the ALJ doesn't talk about all the plaintiff's frequent complaints of pain to her doctors, complaints of pain in her hands, the fact that she had problems carrying things when her hands were affected, problems opening jars, problems even turning pages sometimes, depending on how serious her hands were affected.
Does he mention the progressive increase in medication?
No, he does. She does not. In addition, the plaintiff was given a diagnosis of carpal tunnel syndrome by the doctor who she had seen most recently, Dr. Francis. Dr. Francis prescribed Toradol, which is a medication for moderate to severe pain, prescribed wrist braces for her, and specific exercises for her carpal tunnel syndrome. And the ALJ doesn't even mention the diagnosis of carpal tunnel syndrome. And this court has held in numerous precedents in Heron versus Shalala and Lopez, Dolly Smith and Golombuski all versus Barnhart, that where there's any significant evidence of problems using the hands, that the ALJ has to at least analyze that evidence. And the ALJ did not do that in this case. In addition, plaintiff questions the ALJ's credibility determination. The ALJ did what this Court has now criticized in several cases, which is to find the plaintiff not entirely credible without then explaining what weight was actually given the plaintiff's testimony. In the next sentence, after finding the plaintiff not entirely credible, the ALJ found that the plaintiff's longitudinal medical history was not necessarily consistent with her allegations of disability. But that's a similar kind of statement to finding the plaintiff not entirely credible, because finding a plaintiff not necessarily consistent isn't a finding by the ALJ that it's not consistent. We don't really know what the ALJ meant by that finding. And one of the more serious errors the ALJ made in the credibility determination is that she relied primarily on the fact that plaintiff had what the ALJ termed as a very active lifestyle in the process of caring for her children. But in fact, we think the evidence shows that Ms. Martinez did not live an active lifestyle, that she did some household chores when she could, that she got help from her three eldest children for most of her household chores, that her mother helped her. Her mother went to the grocery store with her because Ms. Martinez could not carry the groceries on her own. Her children or her family was on what Ms. Martinez termed a suicide watch because she had three suicide attempts in the past, so whenever she started becoming withdrawn or isolated, her children knew to call their grandmother to come and check on Ms. Martinez. She got her children off to school in the morning, and then she'd go back and lie down for an hour or two every day because of pain and depression. She testified that the pain and depression caused problems completing tasks. So plaintiff contends that she did not engage in an active lifestyle, and the ALJ's credibility determination is not supported in this case.
Could you comment on the hypothetical question that was posed to the vocational expert with respect to its adequacy?
The hypothetical question limited the plaintiff to light work and unskilled work with some postural limitations. As indicated, it did not include any limitations to in concentration, persistence, or pace, or did not account for those limitations. It also did not include any limitations in manipulation or use of the hands. And it actually didn't account for the plaintiff's other testimony about the need to lie down due to pain and depression and the combination of those conditions. So we believe that the hypothetical was insufficient in this case. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Schultz. Ms. Siegel?
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Catherine Siegel. I represent the Commissioner of Social Security in this case. This case involves issues regarding credibility and residual functional capacity and then also Step 4 and an alternate Step 5 finding.
What's the basis for the ALJ's finding that she was leading a very active lifestyle?
Well, there are a number of things. She relied in part on Dr. Baucus's examination in which the claimant spoke to Dr. Baucus about what her activities included, and she talked about her ability to take care of herself, her personal hygiene, her household. She's maintaining a household with five children, independent. She was
independent. Her mother was taking care of her. The children were taking care of her.
Well, she was in a basement apartment that was in her mother's building,
right.
So it was a separate household. And to the extent that you know her mother was there, I'm sure she helped out, but. She told the doctor that she took care of her children and that she cooked and did the household chores, cleaned her apartment, swept, a normal range of activities.
In her opinion?
In the opinion?
Yeah.
Well, she talks about Dr. Baucus.
No, the business about the active lifestyle.
Oh, the active lifestyle's on page 22, I believe. It's observed that she's able to maintain a very active lifestyle.
No, I see that. Yeah. That's the one sentence. Mm. But you've been explaining other things, and I don't see them in the opinion.
Well, the record contains the
record, yes, but now we're back to the Justice Department lawyer supplying the arguments and the evidence that isn't discussed by the administrative law judge.
I would disagree.
You're not supposed to do that.
Yeah,
she's pointing to the record where, that she has a very active lifestyle, and the record contains
look,
testimony that.
Look, there's that sentence, yes. But where is her further discussion? This is it, right?
Yes, and that's a fair characterization of the record, and the record is part of her decision.
She's supposed to explain what in the record supports her conclusions. She's not supposed to just offer conclusions and leave it to the Justice Department lawyers to flesh them out with a discussion of the record.
I'd like to just add something, because it really did bother me a lot. There was a second state agency psychologist, and the brief contends that that psychologist supported the finding that she had no cognitive limitations, because the psychologist maintained that she didn't have severe mental impairments. But the ALJ didn't rely on that psychologist's opinion. You can look for it from here till next Thursday. And so what the brief has done is something that is absolutely foreclosed by the Chenery Doctrine, and that is post hoc rationalization. And we never want to see that here.
Your Honor, in this case, it's a rather unusual situation in that we have no treating or examining doctors who limited her in any way. And
you're not responding to what I just said.
But
in other words, you
the only,
took
the
something.
Only record,
I am speaking.
I'm sorry.
You took something that was nowhere, and you relied on it, and that is absolutely forbidden. So we don't want that to happen again.
In this case, this is not a case where the ALJ omitted a discussion of conflicting evidence. There really wasn't any conflicting evidence with regard to medical opinions. The only medical opinion in the record is from Dr. Lanier.
But there's certainly an issue about assistance, the older children assisting with the household work. She doesn't discuss that.
And what you just said is utterly incorrect, because more than one physician seemed to find that Ms. Martinez was in pain, although they may have differed in their diagnoses. And, you know, the ALJ is required to engage in a thorough analysis of why her subjective complaints of pain are not credible. And there's nothing here. This is a shocking decision, to be perfectly frank with you. Shocking.
Your Honor, the record from her treating and examining physicians, none of them restricted her functional capacity on the basis of pain. They prescribed medication like naproxen for her hands. They prescribed Cymbalta for her depression, and they said that her condition was well controlled. There aren't any limitations from her treating or examining physicians, so there's not a conflict with the record.
What about the evidence that she had significant limitations on the use of her hands? The ALJ doesn't address those limitations.
Your
Honor, this is one worthless opinion, period.
Dr. Francis said that her symptoms were suggestive of carpal tunnel syndrome. She did not actually diagnose carpal tunnel syndrome. That's on page 359. And with regard to that, the claimant went to a rheumatologist, and the rheumatologist found that she had only slight evidence of inflammatory process and not enough for rheumatoid arthritis. So it was
that isn't discussed either. There's just one or two sentences.
Actually, in the decision, the ALJ does discuss the Dr. Herson's findings. At the top of at the bottom of page 18 and the top of page 19, he does talk about
Dr. Herson having very mild
findings.
And that's it, correct?
That they did not result
in it. That's the entire discussion of the hands.
No, there's also discussion in the credibility finding talking about the very subtle evidence.
Where is that?
That's on page 21 toward the bottom. It starts, in response to complaints of musculoskeletal aches, Daniel Herson detected very subtle evidence of an inflammatory process. And
Wait, where are you looking?
It's the second full paragraph from the bottom.
The Herson paragraph.
Right.
That's what you just said.
No, but there was another Herson paragraph earlier in the decision. That's at the bottom of page 18 and the top of page 19, where he talks about them. They're not being they're more than mild. There's just mild inflammatory process, and then being able to perform fine and gross manipulation on that basis. So while the decision is very streamlined, there
it's
is enough to point to.
It's not very streamlined. It's very inadequate.
How much
do we have to put up with this?
Yeah.
You don't seem to pay any. Your Social Security Administration doesn't seem to pay any attention to our decisions. We're still seeing this ridiculous bit of boilerplate about the not entirely credible. What exactly did she find to be not credible, right? It says the claimant's statements concerning intensity, persistence, and limited effects are not entirely credible. Now, what are her credibility findings?
Pages 20 to 22, she talks about the claimant's specific complaints about not being able to stand or walk. And then...
Where does she say she doesn't believe these?
She actually says that she claims that she's unable to sit or stand for long periods of time, but then when you look at
That's where you have this meaningless boilerplate. That's the sentence that precedes this, after considering the evidence of record, etc. Claimant's statements are not entirely credible. Okay, so what is...
And then she goes into detail about what in the record made
What's this business about not necessarily consistent mean?
She's looking at the
line. What does she mean? Do you have any idea?
She means that the when you look at the longitudinal history of this particular individual, that there were conditions that she had before she applied for disability that showed that she had pretty serious conditions, but that during the period that she actually applied for disability and claims she's disabled, those are conditions are treated with medicine and they've improved.
Where does she say that?
She talks about the conditions being treated with medication and improving in the bottom two paragraphs on that page.
What page are you on?
Page 21.
She recovered from a hysterectomy? Is that what you're talking about?
That's part of it. I mean, she's talking about all of the different conditions that you know, this is what the medical records are in front.
Where is there improvement? I don't see that.
The depression is well controlled by medication prescribed by her family practice doctor. There's been occasions when she stopped taking medication and her symptoms became worse, but they're usually mild if she's compliant with the doctor's treatment program. And then she's also not required the services of a psychiatrist or an outpatient psychologist. So those are all things that the ALJ is considering and when considering the credibility of her mental complaints. The ALJ recognized here that
when this entirely credible and not necessarily consistent, why doesn't she just say, I believe this, I don't believe that? Where did she ever say, I don't believe, you know, X? Where's there that statement in her opinion? I don't believe this.
I think she gave partial credit to the claimants.
What does partial credit do? Why doesn't she say, I believe this much and I don't believe that?
Here the ALJ found light
and
sedentary.
Why didn't she say that? I don't believe X.
I don't know why she didn't say that. But
because it's a very bad opinion, which you insist on defending.
It's my job.
Does the Social Security Administration and the Justice Department automatically defend every single case in which there's a petition for review filed in a court?
No, Your Honor. We go on a case-by-case.
Litigation judgment?
We do.
You do it very badly because you keep getting reversed. And nothing seems to have trickled down to the administrative law judges about how we want them to say if they don't believe a bit of testimony or a doctor's report, they should say that instead of this boilerplate about not entirely credible, and then we can't figure out what she believed and what she didn't believe.
The ALJ here did assess some limitations that were not assessed by doctors. I mean, she did give some credit to the testimony about standing.
That's not responsive to my question. Is there any communication between your level and the administrative law judges?
Certainly. Certainly. We have trainings that we do.
Back to them, the fact there's dissatisfaction with the way these ALJ opinions are prepared. And this boilerplate about not entirely credible is extremely unhelpful to a reviewing court because it doesn't say anything.
And their lack of doing their job makes our job a lot harder. And it makes your job impossible. My heart really goes out to you today to have to come here and try to defend this utterly shocking piece of garbage.
Notwithstanding your opinion of the ALJ's decision, the record here really does show that the claim is probably not sufficient.
But that's the Chenery issue again. That's your right. You're trying to write the opinion that she should have written.
This court does
way outside. You go way beyond. Like you're talking about what the other children did, right? But there's nothing in that in the opinion. She just says five children, take care of five children. That's it. Must be fine. That's all she says. And then you say, well, look in the record. There's a lot more. Actually, less, because the children were helping. Okay, well, thank you, Ms. Siegel. Not your fault. Mr. Schultz, do you have anything further?
I want to just point out two facts. Dr. Francis initially said the plaintiff's symptoms were suggestive of carpal tunnel syndrome, but at page 361, he actually diagnosed carpal tunnel syndrome. And then with the ALJ saying that the plaintiff had not required the services of a psychiatrist or psychotherapy for many years, at pages 394 and 395, Ms. Martinez actually testified that she was on a waiting list to see a psychiatrist for a year and a half at the University of Illinois. So in fact, she hadn't seen a psychiatrist. It was clear that she needed the services of one. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Schultz and Ms. Siegel. Next case.